Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Bonjour, welcome back to La Podcast.
My name is Eric. Your name is Michael, and the beautiful sounds of the 36 outside means this is Uptown Chicago. We're doing two films today. We got a French ragtag thing going on. What are the films we're doing?
Rififi and The Triplets of Belleville are our two films today.
So we're going to spoil these films as usual. We're talking about the entire films, including the end, on this explicit goddamn podcast, if you couldn't tell by the theme. We also have chapters embedded in the episode here. So if you use QuickTime, you should just, you know what, subscribe on iTunes. That's just what you should do.
That's the best way to do it.
And then you can use the chapters thing that pops up at the top up there and just skip to the different movies or to the end or skip basically anywhere you want to skip to.
You can listen to the end first and then the second movie and then the beginning and the first movie.
Don't advocate that people memento our podcast.
All right.
So the first film is Rififi. Before we even get into this, this is another one of those, I forget what the last one was. I think it was one of the old ones. I think it was like Double Indemnity.
Yeah.
That was actually part of a double feature upon its release. This thing, I think it was the UK release that came out, was done with the quarter mass experiment or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it was the A or B film. I think when we talked Double Indemnity, it ended up being the B film. But so the exciting thing about this, and this doesn't quite fit into film noir. This is more like classic heist stuff. So we're not going to play the film noir game.
There was a lot of smoking.
Unfortunately, there was a lot of smoking. So, and a lot of French. Mm-hmm. So maybe film noir. The borders of film noir are always really loose. But I'm going to call this a heist just so we don't have to try and fit in our film noir game.
Right.
Don't worry. We'll get back to that. One of the most interesting things about this film before you even begin watching it is the nut job director of this thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if this guy's actually a nut job, but if I just think of him, like it's like Tesla syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I just think he was like a mad genius, then I enjoy it so much more. But this is Jules Dessin. We should also point out that this is a podcast where Eric is going to say things in French.
Yeah.
So this, right. You might want to plug your ears for the remainder of this.
Yeah. So as far as explicit goes, French listeners, please skip to Triplets of Belleville.
So this guy was basically like blacklisted from Hollywood. This was during the 50s, during the big like communist scare. See Good Night and Good Luck for further details. And they basically kicked this guy out of the country. Another director outed him for being a communist. Which the fact that they were like kicking communists out of, you know, not allowing them to make films anymore is like so fucking ironic and disgusting and the opposite of everything that's ever been good with our country.
Right.
So what does he do? He goes over to Europe where, and this is the best part is like, so he goes to Europe thinking, well, I'll just make films in Europe. And then the United States like actively pursues the companies backing his films and they all get shut down like before production. So he manages to do this adaptation of what will become Rififi, which by the way has a long French title that I can't pronounce.
That ends in Ombres.
You don't know.
Yeah.
So there were a bunch of Rififi movies after this, but this is, we're talking about the original here. This is the guy who did Brute Force. He did Naked City. I mean, he had a lot of film noir stuff that came out before this. And he does this adaptation of a book that, like, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but he hates this book.
Okay.
He is not a fan of the book. I point this out because I think Rififi is a really solid film. We've talked about this before, but people are always whining about how the movie is never as good as the book.
Yeah.
This book was ridiculously like racist and different in the movie in that it focused on all the aspects you like didn't give a shit about. And when he made the movie, he, for instance, the book's like 250, 300 pages or something. He takes 10 pages, which are the heist scene, and he makes it like 20 minutes of the film. I mean, maybe a half hour of it.
Yeah.
It's clearly not proportional. Just so he doesn't have to like include all the like bigoted racist bullshit going on here. I just want to put this argument out again for people who are whining about how the movie's never as good as the book.
Mm-hmm.
You only say that because you never know if something comes from a book if the movie is better.
Right.
Because you just would have never heard of the book because it was
totally
fucking shit.
Totally.
You know? And that's definitely
absolutely
the case here.
And there's a lot of cases where films come out and people are like, oh, that's based on a book. And they read it and then you never find out they read it because the film is so much fucking better that they just keep their mouth shut.
So I don't know. I just, the fact that like he wouldn't shoot during the day and, you know, he refused. There was a lot of stuff going on in France at the time with these like movies where people are in fist fights. And he like went out of his way to not put any fist fights in the, it just makes him sound like a crazy person. Right. I like that. Even to the point where like you see Tony early in the film talk about how they can't use guns because they're too,
rods.
Cause they're too, what, messy or dangerous or whatever.
Rods are too messy in Rafifi.
Yeah. So they go out of their way just to show that they're like, they're not doing this their traditional way. And I really like that about it.
Part of the question going in to Rafifi, I mean, what the fuck is the title?
Yeah.
And there was really no answer.
Thankfully, you get a crash course on what
there's
is
no answer in the intro to the film. There's no answer with the characters. There's no character named Rafifi, which I was kind of finger crossed for, because that made the most sense.
Well, and you get the Stefanois, which is like, well, if they're going to call him that, they're clearly not going to call him Rafifi for short. Right.
So you get instead... you get a music number that just, it's like, hey, you want to know what Rafifi is? Pay attention to this, you know, swanky club singer.
Yeah.
Her jazz, number one jazz hit, Rafifi.
Yeah.
In quotations.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about this is I really just want to know what Rafifi means.
Right.
And so you have this French film, which has a song and it's subtitled. Like, we don't know French. We don't fucking know what they're saying.
Right.
We're not going to pretend to. So we read subtitles. And when it gets to the parts where she says Rafifi, I'm like, awesome. But in the subtitles, it says Rafifi.
Right.
In quotation marks.
Yeah. It doesn't even really tell you. You're supposed to get this idea that it's rough and tumble, I think is the term. You know, these kind of like rogue, renegade, play by their own rules sort of guys. And I think it kind of describes the characters. But the thing that I think is most interesting about, one, it's a titular song instead of a titular line. That too does not give you a definition.
Yeah.
Especially because there's no direct translation of the word Rafifi from French to English. Like, we don't have an English word for it. And it's funny because De Sin later said, I think fairly recently, like in the last 10 years or something, came out saying, titular song, maybe that was a mistake. I don't know if I should have put that in there.
I think I'm on the board with that one.
You know, the only reason that I really love that, I hate it when it comes up. It's always like gimmicky and I don't care. And it's a whole number.
Yep.
Like if you just saw it in the background and you're
saw parts of it and then like she kept singing while the characters were talking about something more interesting.
But instead,
like
the camera moves over like, oh, hey, what's going on over here? The only reason I think that's kind of cool is because later they come back to her like kind of rehearsing it or whatever. Yeah. And you get this scene that I'm going to totally rip off in something I do someday, which is her. You think she's just like kind of alone, you know, nobody's at the club yet or whatever. And she's kind of just warming up. And then all of a sudden it like pans to the right. And there's just a dude with an upright bass sitting next to her, starts playing, and then it pans a little more and there's an entire band there. I just think that's a great scene. So I'm a big fan of heist films, which is why I saw this, because I shouldn't say I'm a big fan of heist films.
You're a fan of the heist concept.
Right. That's the thing. And we've talked about this with a couple other concepts where I really like the idea. And then I always go see the film and it sucks. You know, I hate to pick on the Ocean stuff because you and I have talked about that at Soderbergh and whatever, take it for what it is. The Italian Job has Seth Green, so we can't pick on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like these heist films, they never really work for me. I mean, they're always just, they're run of the mill, like kind of Hollywood action things.
The two biggest issues with heist films is they make it look too easy.
Yeah.
Or they make it so hard that they need to like incorporate a helicopter or one of two underground drills in the entire world, which they can like totally get their hands on if they have enough time.
Yeah.
It's never a matter of like using your mind and like figuring out like how you're going to do it. It's either, oh, I know how we'll do it. We'll walk in and we'll take the safe and put it in a truck and drive away. Or let's get a helicopter to drop like a big vat of bologna on the fucking casino. And then the floor will be slippery. So we can slide in on our bologna shoes and like slide right down to the vault. And then we'll just use our high energy vault beam to take the vault and send
because
it.
One member of the ragtag troop always has
and send it to our chateau in Italy, which will then get on a, you know, first class charter plane and all fly there drinking champagne.
So you could do two things with this premise. The first thing you could do is just make a mockery of it. You see that in The Lady Killers, which is the Coen Brothers thing that no one but me enjoys.
Yep.
Where you just go, okay, it's a, you know, like we talk about with a lot of like the shit monster movie kind of stuff where you just go, it's a monster. Let's move on. We have it's a heist. Forget about it. Here's other stuff to look at. Or you kind of do the parody, like the South Park Obama McCain thing. That was fucking awesome a couple of seasons ago. Or what you could do is the Rafifi method and just build a solid fucking movie around it. I think they do two or three things that really makes this stand up and not be like, you know, a boring, awful film or one that I just don't buy into. The first of which is that unlike any of today's modern heist films, which use the exact premises you're talking about, and furthermore, I would say just try and build upon how ridiculous the stuff is. They just try and go, look at the new laser tool we didn't have in the heist movie from five summers ago.
Right.
Know? This movie actually goes through pains to show you how they set up the heist, which to me, it's a lot like the Con film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really curious how they set up the Con and the things that, you know, seeing the Con executed, it's like a game of mousetrap. It's,
right.
You know, it's kind of interesting to watch all the pieces fall into place. But I think what's really interesting is the scenes where, you know, you see them walking through. I think he's with, his name's Joe, right? I don't,
yeah,
you know, it's
yeah,
French,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, right.
I got nothing. Tony's with Joe and he's going through all the buildings and making sure, you know, they're just walking down the street that he knows the opening and closing time and some detail about the nature of the business for literally everything on the street.
Right.
I mean, it's showing you that these guys are really practicing this. They want to make sure this is fucking smooth rather than your usual thing where you're just supposed to buy that you're, I don't know, George Clooney, for instance, is just a genius and has done all this homework that,
sure.
you know, we don't see. We're actually going through it and showing you why we should believe that these guys are so awesome. You know, we see them worrying about the locks on the door. We see the alarm scene is always really great for me after they bring in Caesar, who is the director, to crack the safe. You know, they spend an entire scene, which I think is a really good scene, basically with trial and error with the alarm. Going like, well, if we cut the wire, what happens? If we beat it with a hammer, what happens?
Right.
I know we'll fill it with foam. And you don't even really get a good idea of what that foam is going to do until you see it again mm-hmm. later. And you end up seeing it in part of what is what I think probably the most showy, you know, artsy part of the film. And the one that when you see the film, you're probably just supposed to accept that it's great art and not talk about it. But this is double feature, so we're gonna analyze it.
Yeah.
Which is the silent scene.
Yeah.
So give me some feedback. This is your first time going through it. At what point did you realize, hey, this scene is silence?
Really early on.
Yeah.
Like before they had even like started chiseling at the floor.
So do you think it's bold that they would go? I mean, this is 20 or 30 minutes. You know?
I don't know about bold. I think it's just a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole premise of the scene is they need to be quiet. They're, you know, they're fucking robbing a bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
that and you have it coming straight off the alarm stuff.
Right.
You know, well, see, that's where I thought it would end.
Yeah.
As soon as they foam the alarm, I'm like, okay, they can afford to talk to each other. But the silence continues on after that.
I think that the dynamic of that scene is that the film isn't covering shit up with the score.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you hear dust hit the floor.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Something that the score would probably cover up and the film could get away with. Let's look at it at face value.
Mm-hmm.
If this scene had a score,
mm-hmm.
they probably wouldn't have needed to address the dust falling
onto
the
sure,
floor because the score just swelled over it.
Exactly.
And then everybody would have been like, oh yeah, that's fine. There's
probably need to force it a little bit more.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's funny that you mentioned that because another one of the things, and I always fall back on the silent scene as being one of the things that the director really brought to this film, you know, in adapting it from the shit book, is that originally, and he kind of had a fight with a composer about this who did, you know, the score for the rest of the movie, which I think is pretty good. I like the opening and the crazy closing car number. But originally the composer was like, oh no, you got to put score in that. So he creates score for the entire scene and Jules basically goes to him with two cuts of it. And he's like, here, I'll let you pick. And he gives him the cut with his score intact. And then he gives him the cut with, you know, just the Foley, which by the way, if you want a good exercise in Foley, completely silent film like this, great practice. So the composer looks at it and he goes, yeah, we're definitely going with a no score. You were totally right. But I think it builds the tension.
Mm-hmm.
So much so, even for like 5 minutes after the heist, there's still no one talking because it's just like, you're so tense. And I think one of the pitfalls of a lot of these older movies, and people will eventually see this in newer films, is having your tension overscored. You know, it works in a lot of like modern blockbusters because we're used to that score aesthetic. But in 10 or 20 years or maybe longer, I don't know, people will look back on that and just hear what you now hear in a 70s film,
right.
which is just, whoa, that score is so awful in 70s and cheesy. Where like silence,
or
that's never going to become
80s film.
Yeah. Silence is never going to become dated. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that scene's always going to hold up. It's definitely timeless. And I think that's great.
All right. So another thing that this film does that literally every heist film ever made neglects to do is put film after the heist.
Yeah.
Every film, they finish the heist.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's like a cute wrap up scene where the characters are all like, cool. Well, I guess I'm going to take off
they're
in my separate direction.
With all their money.
Yeah. Or they're standing next to a fountain.
Yeah.
And they're just like, well, all right. Good job, guys. I'm going to walk in this trajectory away from the camera.
Yeah.
And eventually the last one or two characters walk toward the camera. And since they're wearing black suits, it blacks out the camera on the credits roll.
Yep. Done.
This film's like, okay, heist is over anyway. Now that this film is like still got a story.
Yeah.
The film isn't over with the heist. That's the thing that I always wonder with heist films. A fucking casino gets robbed.
Yeah.
What happens?
Yeah.
It's always the casino's robbed. All right, story over.
Yeah.
How about the casino's robbed? What the fuck? Like,
Do
you do after that?
Yeah. Yeah, this is totally your like criminal or inside man or like, what was that thing that came out a couple of years ago? The inside job or bank heist movie?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Heist job movie.
Yeah, exactly. And they all do the same thing. They're all just like people in a limo. They all smile and laugh. They, you know, clink their champagne together. But this movie deals with fencing, which is one of the most exciting parts of this whole thing is no one ever thinks about the fencing part, which is basically, you know, the diamond dealer or whatever who has to recut all these stones so they're not recognized and then pawn them somewhere. And if you don't have one of the, like that guy is how you get caught. Damn, you know what? I was going to tell you the name too. There was a movie I saw recently where that is actually how the people get caught too, which is awesome. But now I can't say it because that totally spoils it. But whatever, I'm going to leave that in the show so people know that film's out there. And if you find it, doublefeatureshow@gmail.com and I will verify to you that that is the film. I mean, your fencing guy could totally squeal. Like he could break the deal for you. He gets a part of the cut and you have to wait for him to like accept the jewels and stuff. So that tension is just as much there. You know, Tony says that to everybody, like, you know, we're not out of this yet.
Right.
And after they get all the jewels and everything, kind of letting you know, hey, this film isn't over yet. And sure enough, like during that whole process, when he's trying to basically get the cash for what they've stolen, you know, the kid is abducted and all this other stuff comes in. And if we would have just ended the movie where they get the jewels, everybody would have been okay. But by the end of this film, everyone is fucking not okay. Mm-hmm. You know, he shoots Caesar.
Right.
I mean, you know, he ends up dead at the end of the film.
Right. Yeah,
or
by not
anyways.
Okay, you mean everyone is dead.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. No, exactly. The kid comes back, I guess. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. But yeah, everybody is in pretty awful shape by the end of this. And you wouldn't have even known about that if the film ended with them all walking in their separate directions into the sunset. The one other thing I did want to talk about that I think makes this film go miles beyond the other heist films is these characters. Usually what you get in a heist film is, you know, your stereotypical characters. You get the hacker and the inside man and the like the guy who worked at a bank once before and the thug and, you know, like these awful caricatures that we've seen over and over. And Bernie Mac. And this movie, everybody is somewhat of a professional. They still have their different tasks that they're brought in for because that's realistic, right? You need people who have different areas of expertise, but I buy that they're all serious guys. Like nobody here, even Mario, who's supposed to be the comic relief, like, you know, we're introduced to him in what's a really goofy scene.
Yeah.
I mean, he's splashing in the bath with his wife, his pet, right? And you're going, you're kind of rolling your eyes and you're going, God, who the fuck is this guy? But as soon as the men come over, he's all serious.
Yeah.
Like no fucking around with this guy. And when they're inside, nobody's cracking jokes. There's no one-liners.
Right.
Like, this is a serious fucking film. They're really robbing a bank. And I think all of these characters are built really, really well. And you buy that they're all professionals. You know, you don't think that any of these guys are brought in because this young, slick college kid, you know, knows how to use a computer.
He's like, showing the game.
Yeah, this old-timer
has
been
gift
cracking
early.
Safes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I think this is one of those movies that if you're crafting a heist film, you need to look at it for direction.
I'm Rebecca Watson from the much better and more popular podcast, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, and you are listening to Double Feature.
I'm going to give you the lead on this one, but I got nothing for you.
We also
watched The Triplets of Belleville.
Right, in French, the French title, Le Triplets de Belleville.
Le Triplets de... I can't do it in French.
It's all right.
Here's what I will tell you about this.
All right, good.
I believe that this movie, and this may sort of show my hand here, but we'll you know, it's time to get into that. I believe this movie was secretly orchestrated by Americans to unite us all against the French.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all I've got.
So this film from you is a conspiracy.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think American directors made it and they just made people with these really bad French. I don't want to use the word caricatures again, yeah, but these like extreme, you know, dramatic, almost surreal portrait of what French people look like. And then they come to America and everyone's fat and eating cheeseburgers. And they're just like, see, American people, the French hate you. And I think this movie, this is probably what broke down our communication with France.
All right. Well, that's wrong.
Okay. I tried, man. Yeah. That's all I had.
So Triplets of Belleville is it's a really weird, obscure animated movie. Well, I don't know if it's weird or if it's French.
Yeah.
So
right.
Before we really,
is it possible to be both?
Before we get into this film, as a film, let's get into French films because, okay, you know, we're kind of at the crux of the show, the French ragtag show. So we have both types of French films on the podcast this week. We have the first kind of French film, which is a film in French.
Right.
And then we have the second kind of French film, which is a French fucking film.
Yeah.
Like a film that's really fucking French.
Right. Like, I would explain that as you have a movie that is French and then you have French that is a movie.
Right.
And that's what we're looking at.
There we go. What this encompasses, like, I mean, poster child of the French fucking film being Amelie.
Yeah.
Just because that's well known.
Yeah.
But every like delicatessen is another one.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like this film, the key points are the fact that like their house leans because for some reason the railroad gets built against it.
Yeah.
And there's tall boats and weird, you know, everybody looks fucking strange.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm getting at. Like, it's almost surrealism. It's this insane art style.
Right. But at the same time, like, I'm not sure if that's like, so I'm going to ask you, because I don't know, but I don't know if that's just obnoxious or if it's like commendable art.
Well, here's the thing. And this is why, you know, I never want to come on the show and be like, I got nothing, because we have a fucking show. Like there's no reason for us to have a show if we're just going to dismiss films left and right. But what I am going to say is, you know, cause we've watched movies before of yours, a movie like The Rock or something,
yeah,
you know, where I've just gone, look, this is why I think this film is bad and I want nothing to do with it. I look at this film and I don't understand it. It scares me when I know we have to do a show because it's a piece of French art. I don't know anything about French art. I am so out of my league here. This is like, it's like we just watched a Bollywood film.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to tell you about this. I don't see, this is what it rides on for me. I don't know if this is a particular French art style we're dealing with that is common, or if, like you said, it's just obnoxious.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some kind of obnoxious satire that isn't translating to English for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but watching the film like confuses and nauseates me.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how to deal with it.
Right. Well, I'm going to try to clear that up by giving you a brief synopsis of what actually happens in the Triplets of Belleville.
Right, I'm going to
briefer than the 70 minute film.
I'm going to let you, in a short film too. I'm going to let you take our typical short synopsis, but I think I have an idea. So we'll see if those line up.
All right. So film opens, little kid with his grandma.
Following you so far.
They live in a shack and the grandma tries to please the little kid. Can't figure it out. Buys him a bike. Years go by. Kid's training on the bike. Years go by. Kid is he's a fucking Tour de France biker. Still
with
grandma,
too much Larry Bishop
with grandma as the coach.
Right.
And he enters the Tour de France.
Cyclist, I believe.
Yeah,
is the
whatever. He gets kidnapped by the French mafia, taken to America, followed by grandma and the dog. The French mafia have this weird, elaborate betting ring where they took the three Tour de France cyclists.
Right.
Put them on this strange rig.
The French mafia, who you should not to interject into your excitable synopsis here, but the French mafia, you should note, includes Joe Pesci attached to two versions of the monolith from 2001 with Bruce Campbell for heads.
Right.
Please continue.
And then they have this weird betting ring. The grandma chases him, can't figure out how to save him, runs into these old vaudevillian troupe, the Triplets of Belleville.
Right.
Who then the group of them in a ragtag fashion figure out how to save her grandson. And then there's a really like weird take on the chase scene where all the cars are really fast.
Yeah.
And they're riding this tiny, slow, it's like a moving island.
Right.
through Belleville, which is fucking New York City.
Yeah, right.
And that's the film.
Yeah.
That's the synopsis right there.
No, I got that part.
Okay.
I think I know what happened inside the film. I don't know what happened outside the film. And, you know, it's funny because we watched this with a bunch of people and we all just kind of stared at it.
Yeah.
And we weren't really sure what to make of it. There were parts that were jokes, but I think we were so frightened by it that no one really knew, like, if you laughed, if the, like, creatures from the film wouldn't come out and, like, eat your face or something.
The thing about the movie is it never lets you know how seriously you're supposed to take
right.
it. I think it tries in the very beginning. And if you're
does it?
Paying
is
attention.
Is that what the opening number
the
is?
The very beginning. Yeah, I think that's.
Did you notice that the opening number is just you all, everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing.
It's one of those songs composed out of a 20-second clip of looped music.
The thing about the opening number is it's either like funny.
Right.
Or really weird.
Right.
And I think that's where the deviation of French to American comes in.
Right.
Like,
we have that stuff in America, though. We have like the sick and twisted film festival nonsense.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's supposed to be sick and twisted or if it's supposed to be like
MTV
like
stuff that came on at 2 a.m. after Beavis and Butthead.
I get this vibe that like it's supposed to be like Three Stooges style funny.
Is it?
Like really
basic,
really
uncomfortable.
Silly, funny stuff.
Oh.
But like men turn into monkeys and like almost rape topless African women and then a giant baby dances on and like
yeah
that's kind of the par for the course for this film, you know what I mean?
So in France that kind of becomes the question, or in Europe or really whatever, it's possible that the rest of the world outside of my apartment understands this, but let's just say in France, right?
Yeah.
Is this we have to deal with what kind of humor is this? I mean, we could be really generic and label it French humor, but that's like labeling something American humor.
Mm-hmm.
America has slapstick. America has Rob Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
America has like dry sarcasm, which is different from dark comedy, which, you know, there's all these different kind of kind of styles of comedy. And so I think that's, you know, that's got to be the same in other countries, although they have their most prominent forms.
Right.
But you look at this kind of French comedy, and I don't know if this is French absurdism or if this is French slapstick, or what kind of French comedy
exactly.
I'm looking at, or if it is just supposed to make me way uncomfortable, which is exactly what it accomplishes.
Well, now let's put like the fact that we don't really know where this all falls in aside. Uh-huh. I think the best way to approach this is just look at a couple of the individual scenes as vignettes.
Okay.
And see if they work.
Right.
One that stands out to me, like whenever I'm fucking looking through my DVDs and I see this, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the movie where the lady blows up the frogs.
Okay.
And then there's the weird eating the frogs, like the whole scene with frogs.
Yeah.
The scene where she blows, I get that. I think that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throws a grenade and the frogs explode. Like,
sure.
That's funny.
That's one of the moments where I looked at it and go, that's definitely supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
But I'm so uncomfortable.
Exactly.
I can't laugh or my French captors might notice me.
But then there's scenes. Okay. So another example of like something that I just don't really know about.
Mm-hmm.
Is the fucking whole Tour de France.
Yeah.
Part of that I get.
Tour de France is like the most French culture I understand.
Yeah.
That and cheese. I know cheeses and I know Tour de France kind of.
And
so that's all the help I'm going to be here.
The thing that I do get with the whole Tour de France scene is, they put a candy on the wheel and the dog ate it and now the dog's the wheel.
Right.
That's funny.
Okay.
I'll accept that's funny. But then you have the pig riding the sausage bike.
Yeah.
And you can look at that in one way and be like, haha, that's funny. Or you can look at it and be like, France is fucking weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Or you can look at, that's when you're first introduced.
You don't know if it's a joke or if it's sarcasm, some kind of weird political satire
exactly.
we're not getting or
exactly.
what's going on here.
And then you see the French mafia and they're like stuck to each other.
Right.
And you're like, that's a novel, cool way of doing art.
Yeah.
Or it's really fucking weird.
Yeah. Right. Or it has some kind of meaning we don't understand.
Exactly.
You know, I look at there's a surface way to look at a film, which is the way a lot of people view films. And I'm sure a lot of people own this film just because it's like, it's weird and it's trippy and you kind of like, oh, haha, wasn't that weird?
I like it because it's short and it's animated and the story's entertaining enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the chase scene at the end is pretty cool.
And then there's, you know, there's a deeper layer to this, which I'm not sure is ever there. That's always the question when you look at something in an artistic way. A lot of people just scoff at artistic interpretation of anything, which is, you know, is okay.
Right. Well, I think it goes back to what I consider the Shakespeare question.
Which is what?
people look into everything Shakespeare ever wrote, right. Every individual word. Mm-hmm. And like, we could, like, if Shakespeare came back, we're like, hey, dude, this was all, he's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
I fucking just wrote plays.
Well, that's always the gamut with art, right? That's always kind of the gamble you have, is when you have an art, our entire show is in danger of crossing that line at all times. But when you look at a film in an artistic way, you run the risk of like the film not wanting to be artistic.
Right.
You run the risk of basically making shit up that isn't there.
Exactly.
You know, and that's why we don't even touch symbolism.
Yeah.
Because I'm convinced that most of the time symbolism is just people making shit up.
I think
is fine. It's laying on your back and looking at shapes and clouds.
The problem that you run into is whether you're watching a film. Yeah. And making shit up, you know, you're watching a film and fucking pulling stuff out of your ass.
Right.
And then that the director looks at it and he goes, oh yeah, that's just a coincidence.
Right. Well, and that's always my favorite part of having directors on our show. And, you know, we've been reassured almost without failure.
Yeah.
Even more so than we could have even imagined, is every time we talk to a director, you know, we will make guesses sometimes that are wrong. And I love it when I have a director on and I'm like, hey, what about this? And they're like, that's not in the film. And I'm like, oh. But most of the time, you know, you talk to them about stuff and they tell you, yeah, that meant this and that meant that. And I'm glad you saw that thing. So, you know, I think most of the time we're spot on with that stuff. But especially when you enter into this weird French territory, I just don't know.
Looking at face value at this film, it's entertaining. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
There are scenes that are cool. I think the Futurama thing where they incorporate 3D with the animation.
Right. Yeah.
That all looks pretty hip.
Uh-huh.
I personally enjoy the look of the ocean liners.
Oh yeah. The water stuff.
And
too.
The water, yeah. The whole thing.
Especially the early stuff. Yeah. Really cool.
But then like at the same time, there's like the thing where he sits on a weight.
Yeah.
To decide when to feed the dog and like when he's eaten enough.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something that the French are like, this is what people do. Or well, if it's something that the French are like, look, he's maintaining his weight. Look how silly they're doing it.
All right. So here's what I'm going to do. I've said we've come to the point in the show where we've asked the appropriate questions and now we need to make up answers.
Right.
So here's what I'm going to theorize here is if you want to enter the realms of satire, and this is all completely speculative and hypothetical at this point, we officially have no idea what we're saying anymore. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Yeah, pretty much. I like the movie. That's what I want to say.
All right, good.
That's what I can say with gusto and full on credit.
All right. So I'm going to say that could be sort of poking fun at how ridiculously like into the Tour de France people
okay,
get.
Okay. So
you know, they basically like they're showing how much this guy is training and you know, like the weight thing, like, he's probably sitting on this weight because he wants to make sure he's eating exactly the right amount of food. And, you know, they make the comparison again, I think ad nauseum to horses between the riders. You always get the weird horse sounds in there, which like for me, you know, again, French culture maybe, but from a filmmaking perspective, like I think it's just way too much.
Yeah. I think that the whole film is laced with social commentary.
Right.
But I mean, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is the way to go. But I think if you're going to make social commentary, you have to have a side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this movie's like, look, the French are like obsessed with this stupid bike race and and accordion music.
Right.
Anyway, in America, everyone's fat and eats hamburgers and doesn't like pay attention. And Boy Scouts.
Now,
what the fuck is up with Boy Scouts?
I think it's possible that the film has a side and we're not getting it, but I'm with you on this one. I think they're not choosing a side. I think
what happened is they're like, hey, let's make Americans fat. And they're like, we don't want to be offensive. Let's pick on the French.
Yeah, that's possibly it too. You know, they could just be what I would imagine they're doing is standing back and just making fun of a lot of things.
That's fair.
That's a way to do this, but I
think
it's
the
not
film
the way
is too artistic for that kind of humor. And
that brings it back to the Three Stooges
fun.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, we're here to make jokes is basically unless there's like a nuance to the Three Stooges, I don't understand.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, entertainment for entertainment's value. You're watching something and it's, you know, that's a very humanistic and real level. You're watching people make jokes for the purpose of entertaining their fellow man. Totally fine, admirable thing to do with art. But if you're going to make something that looks like satire, I think you have to kind of have a message with that. At least that's what I want from filmmakers. I want them to be contributing. And I did, again, maybe this is, I'm just looking at this way too much, but I need a contribution to the collective of human ideas. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
I need them to add their, here's their piece of art. And like you said, it's very artistic, which would make me, that's why I lean in this direction.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm used to American cinema, or, you know, maybe not. But if you're going to contribute this artistic piece to the collective of, you know, the surplus of all art in existence, shouldn't you kind of say something with it besides like, here are funny American stereotypes animated?
Right.
There's really only one other thing that I can even think to bring up here. Wait, I'm sorry, this is going to be a short show. We're just lost here.
Yeah. Well, it's just French, man.
Yeah. We can't just come on and be like, this is just French. So in trying to, in treating this like a mystery, I'm gonna also look at the scene with the frogs.
Okay.
And this is another thing that I think might be an insight into either French culture or the sort of directive of this film here. They're definitely trying to gross the audience out.
Yeah.
Right. Because, and this is why I say it, if it was just everybody in France is eating frogs, I would just be like, haha, silly French culture.
Right.
You know, as far as I know, all people in France may eat frogs.
Yeah.
And I'm just not aware of that strange piece of French culture. It's just not something I know about. But I mean, you know, in seriousness, they go to America and, you know, they show the older woman and she's living with the triplets or whatever, you know, or staying there the night, and they fix up these frogs to eat. And the reaction shots you get from her and the dog show an absolute level of like disgust or at least, you know, hesitation.
Discomfort.
I mean, yeah, she ends up eating them and whatever, and that's fine. But the way that they show you this entire scene, from, you know, getting the frogs to the end where the frogs are like hopping around out of their food, I think it's supposed to make you look at it and go, wow, that's gross, or wow, I'm uncomfortable. I feel like what other, just play devil's advocate here. What other reason could they have for showing you the gross frog scene?
I can give you one answer and you're going to hate it.
Uh-oh.
Let's look at this. Let's look at this. And I'm just going to dictate to you the scene using specific terminology and see if you pick up on what I'm saying.
Uh-oh.
You have an American with a bomb that blows up a bunch of frogs.
Uh-huh.
And then they sit around the table laughing and eating frogs while the French people are uncomfortable to eat the frogs.
You're going to have to give me something a little more specific here.
Americans blow up French people.
You think that's it?
It's possible.
Maybe we're reading
devil's
into
advocate.
It too much.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
Okay. Is
I'm
that your safe card?
You said play devil's advocate and tell me what other possible thing. And I'm like, okay, well maybe. And I went symbolism, dude.
That's all. Yeah.
That's the only way to go when there's
no other
reason.
Invoke symbolism for the first time ever on this show.
It's bullshit.
You asked, what does the red lamp mean? What is it symbolic of? Yeah, I don't know. That's all I got for that. I look at that and I say, that's got to be to gross an audience out, which it makes me think that might be some insight into the rest of the film.
I think the way to tackle this is to watch the film and grab the things you can grab onto and then like take them and figure out what where the other pieces kind of like slide against that.
Yeah, what the other pieces could mean, taking the only precedent being the things you understand. And really, that frog scene is really one of the only ones I could look at it and know, all right, I understand, even without any language, without any indication, that this is a person in a foreign area that is supposed to be America. And she's almost forced to eat frogs.
Right.
You know, and everything is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they, not to say shoot it, but animate it, I guess, the way they show the things, and especially the reaction of the dog goes, all right, this is to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to say that maybe the objective of this film is to make you uncomfortable.
All right.
That's totally possible.
Also, there's no talking.
Otherwise, I got nothing. I have literally no idea. If you have an idea, doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. That's twice I've plugged our Gmail. So seriously, send us some Gmail. I would legitimately like to know what I'm missing out on this film. Next year when we do these shows, we'll have plenty more time to research and get back to people about what these insane things are. But I'm afraid this is a mystery that may just be lost forever.
All right.
Speaking of Gmail, we're ending the show.
Yeah.
We have a website. It's doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. That's our email address again. Doublefeatureshow.com.
Yeah.
I'm on top of my game today. The French, man, they threw me off. You can get to our MySpace and Facebook on there. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. Subscribe in iTunes, because if you don't, we will stop recording the show forever. That's probably not true.
Tell people that, because they might like delete their subscription.
Subscribe in iTunes. It's free. Just go on iTunes, use it. It's great. Leave us a little review on there, even if it's one star and really mean. More reviews puts us higher in the iTunes chart, which means people find and actually listen to this obscure, strange piece of art that you have found and known as the double feature show.
Yeah. Double feature show.
I think that's pretty much covered all the necessary ending things. What other films what do we do next time?
Next time we are going to cover Apt Pupil and Deliver Us From Evil. I believe it's the final documentary.
Maybe the final documentary of the year. Tank Girl.
Oh, right.
Not a documentary. You know, you go for the joke and sometimes it just doesn't work. And that's fine.
Sometimes you end up eating frogs.
Sometimes watch more. What's that thing you say?
I say watch more fucking film.
Yeah, you do. Bye.